Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to this episode number 84 of the Free Cities Podcast. Well, today's episode is a Prospera update show. Prospera is, of course, one of the Free Cities ecosystem's flagship projects that, in my opinion, everyone should be watching very closely. What they're doing in Honduras and the pioneering issues that they are dealing with are certainly laying the groundwork for so many of the projects that we will see unfolding in the future. In Prague last week, I bumped into Prospera's CFO, Luc Thibodeau, and he gave me the lowdown on all the latest developments in the jurisdiction, including the exciting news that residents have now started moving into Duna, which is their flagship new build on the site, and also news on their legal battle with the Honduran government, and all the latest info on new projects and, interestingly, how Luc sees the project evolving now in the short to medium term. This discussion is jam-packed with great info and insights, and I hope it inspires you to go and check it out for yourself. As Luc puts it, and I love this quote, "It's all theoretical until it happens." And that is most certainly the case with Prospera. I've been watching it for a couple of years now. Anyway, comments and questions, as always, directed to me at podcast@free-cities.org, and check out the show notes for Free Cities info. And if you're interested in going a little deeper into Prospera, then check out episodes 2 to 9 of this podcast, way back when we first started. All but two of those episodes were recorded in Prospera by myself with various people involved in the project. And then, of course, whilst you're fantasizing about hot desking on a peaceful Roatanese beach, well, why don't you then just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Luc Thibodeau.
Father's Day.
Your first one. Yeah. Oh, congratulations. What have you got? What did you get? A boy or a girl?
A boy.
Yeah. How old?
We unwrapped the boy.
Yeah.
He's 8 months now.
8 months. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So I got him and the wife, and they're both here with me at the hotel.
Really? First trip for the son, is it?
No, he's got a lot of miles on him.
Really?
Well, we've been flying back and forth to Roatan.
Yeah.
And then we had another trip to Cancun. And then we flew to Canada for a friend's wedding. He's been on probably 13 or 14 flights.
Why don't you introduce yourself first? That's nice and easy. Name and what you do. And then we'll move into the kind of the fact that you're going to him from Roatan, because that would be self-explanatory.
Yeah. No, sounds good. So my name's Luc. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of Prospera.
And you're living in Prospera?
And I'm living in Prospera, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
With your son and wife?
I'm living in Prospera with my son and wife, yeah, that's right.
Wow.
So we've been there full-time since April now. I've been with the project for about a year, just under a year. So we've been, you know, flying back and forth doing that thing, but full-time residence since April.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many of you are there that are full-time residents there then?
You know, there's a small group of us starting to form. You know, initially the community is made up of a lot of guys involved in the project. Those are sort of the first pioneers. There's a couple entrepreneurs who are setting up shops, setting up business, and they're also, you know, involved in the community. But I'd say true Prosperians, there's, you know, a few dozen. But there's a lot of people who live in Prospera, just don't know it, right? Like it's 420 acres and it has existing villas, existing houses in that zone. So there's a lot of people, you know, inside of Prospera who, you know, they're not really Prosperians, so to speak. They're just sort of living within the zone without really realizing it. And their individual property is not yet enrolled. So you look at a map of the, you know, enrolled land in the ZA, and there's little pockets of, you know, privately owned land that's not yet incorporated. So I'd say, you know, probably 150 to 200 people within the zone, and probably a few dozen of, like, you know, core Prosperians who understand the project and are there for that.
That's the first time I've ever heard them called Prosperians. Oh, it's a good word. It's got a ring to it, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Prosperians. It's almost like prospectors as well, which is kind of similar, because it's a bit of a frontier place, isn't it?
That's funny.
We often talk about this on this podcast, about the kind of the fact that frontier people who come first are often the craziest, the most transient, often, you know, and the hardest to keep, if you know what I mean. A lot of digital nomads, for example, would find someone like Prosper a really interesting proposition. Have you noticed that, and have you thought about that? Like, how do you keep people there and stop, or how do you stop people from just using it as a base? Right, because obviously, presumably, you want people to come and stay and be part of the community for as long as possible, right?
It's a new project, so, you know, defining that now is core to what we're doing. You know, I work for the project, but I'm also the core demographic, right? I'm a young guy, I'm entrepreneurial, I have a family, I have a kid, you know, so I'm building Prospera for me. So I'm building that into the fabric of what is the community there now, which is, you know, awesome to be able to design that. But you're right, you know, the kinds of people that Prospera is attracting and trying to attract are generally transient. They're guys who are, like you said, digital nomads, they're entrepreneurs, they want to build, they want to explore, they want to grow. But everybody's got to settle down, right? Like, you have people, you know, going from country to country, bouncing around, but it's exhausting. If you've traveled, you know, a lot yourself, you know that you need to, you know, there's this desire to settle down. And I think once people, you know, look at what are the opportunities, once they decide to settle down, I think Prospera needs to be and should continue to, you know, position itself to be that a very attractive option. So I think, you know, we need to build the infrastructure, and I think we're doing that to attract the demographic that we want. We have the Montessori school, which is important to me. You know, thinking about raising kids there, we have, you know, we're talking to private clinic providers to bring them into the zone. Like, that's super important to me, having a young son. So we're building the infrastructure to make it very attractive, and we'll have done our job right if, you know, in 2 years' time, someone like me has a harder time talking my wife into, you know, not wanting to leave than wanting to come, right? Right now it's like, no, listen, I promise it's the next thing. Like, I promise it'll, you know, it'll shape out, and there's going to be more of a community, and it's a little bit of that right now. And she sees it, and she's awesome, right? There wasn't much, you know, arm twisting there. But we'll have done our job right if in that period of time, you know, people are having a harder time coming up with reasons why they shouldn't be in Prospera. And I think we're very close to that already. I think people see the system that they're in, and they're looking for an alternative. And I think that's probably why there's a lot of people who are digital nomads. They're looking for something else. And I think Prospera provides that.
What's your own personal history then with the project and just this kind of world in general? Because I know this from personal experience. It's a bit of a niche world, the world of places like Prospera, jurisdictions, you know, people traveling around the world looking for the better life. It's not mainstream by any means yet. So how do you get involved in this, and how do you ever even hear about a job at a place like Prospera? Because that's weird enough in itself, right?
Yeah, I first heard about it. I'm a Bitcoiner. So that was, you know, my first introduction was in my community, in my circle. I was at Adopting Bitcoin, which is a conference in El Salvador. And it was just, you know, happenstance. I happened to walk into a workshop that was, you know, already in progress. I hadn't been planning to go. And my buddies were there like, hey, Luke, come check this out. I'm like, oh, okay, sounds good. I just finished up lunch. Walk in, I start hearing about Prospera. And it's like, you know, my mind is blown. I'm just, you know, you don't realize how bad something is until you find, you know, a better alternative. And I think that's why a lot of people are so drawn to Bitcoin. They don't realize how bad their money is until they find Bitcoin. And for me, you know, what I say is I didn't realize how bad, you know, governance was. I had an idea. You know, I grew up in a conservative home. I was a libertarian, but I didn't realize how bad that system was until I started hearing about there's a different way to do this. That's why, okay, like, it started to click there. So that's when I first heard about the project. And get this. So I hear about it in November at Adopting Bitcoin. And not even 3 months later, my wife's family has this vacation planned to nowhere else except for Roatan.
Wow.
And she's been, the months prior, she's been trying to be like, hey, you know, like, come with me and my family on this vacation. I'm like, yeah, as fun as that sounds, like, you know, go have fun with your family. I'll, you know, hang out for a week back home. And then as soon as I get back, I'm like, hey, like, you know, is there still room? Like, can I still come? Or are we still on for Roatan? She's like, wait, what? So that's kind of how it all came about. And then not even, like I said, not even 3 months after hearing about the project, I'm on site with Dushan. He's, you know, heading up the Bitcoin Education Center, that like massive Bitcoin Education Center, you know, at the top of the hill in Prospera, beautiful Bitcoin Education Center. But I'm with him and I'm seeing this project and I'm meeting the people who are involved, and it all sort of came together there. So I knew at that point I wanted to be involved. I didn't know how yet. I had toured around, you know, Duna, the Beta District, and seen the Duna Tower going up. And I was thinking, you know, maybe as an investment opportunity, like obviously this thing is, in my opinion, this thing was going to take off. Like maybe I just want to buy a unit there. So I ended up getting on, you know, the mailing list for like an investor mailing list. And then, yeah, they had been started their search for a new CFO. And, you know, it was an opportunity I couldn't pass up. So got in touch with Eric, and then the rest is history.
And what's your, have you been in the CFO business in the past then? Is that like where you come from?
Or? Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's part of what drew me. I was a CFO of a publicly traded, non-custodial Bitcoin brokerage in Canada. So we did, you know, online stuff, ATM stuff. So, and I was also the chief compliance officer there. So, you know, I'm steeped in this culture of overregulation and expensive regulation and audits and, you know, reviews and compliance people, you know, peeling back, you know, what are you doing? And just this intense, expensive oversight. So for me, hearing about, you know, the regulatory regime within Prospera was mind blowing. It's like, it's so innovative, so creative. And for me as a businessman, like, you know, I'm entrepreneurial. Thinking about the types of businesses and the types of entrepreneurs that this unlocks, like you want to do a crypto exchange in Canada or in the United States, like you're spending millions and millions of dollars, no exaggeration, you're spending millions of dollars, you're hiring teams of lawyers, teams of compliance specialists, you know, to deal with the regulatory bodies, and it's so cost prohibitive, so there isn't a good free market in that space. And you can take that same business model and apply it to Prospera, and you can say, listen, I want to set up a crypto exchange. It's a regulated industry. I understand that. I want to use the laws from, you know, Switzerland, and maybe those don't work in a year from now. I'll opt into, you know, Germany, and those don't work for now. I mean, maybe I'll opt into wherever else. You can choose your regulatory, you know, body that oversees you. Like, that was super innovative for me coming from that background, right?
In that case of choosing regulations, in that specific case you're talking about there, are you choosing, say, the regulations from Austria because it's just a lot cheaper and a lot easier? Is that the main reason? You know, say you're saying you need to employ millions of dollars worth of lawyers. Is that the main impetus in that particular example? I don't mean across the board. I'm trying to work out why else you might do it, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of people think that's the main reason. I think that's the driver for a lot of new initiatives. If I'm, you know, setting up a company from, you know, just from scratch, from seed capital, and I hadn't done it before, this makes it a heck of a lot easier to do it for the first time. But there are industries, and there's lots of industries that want to shift operations geographically, and that would require them to learn an entire new systems of regulations for that new host country, right? If I'm a cryptocurrency exchange in Canada and I want to go to Brazil, I got to hire Brazilian lawyers. I got to teach my operations team about, you know, Brazilian KYC. I've got to do all these different things that allow me to do the business that I know and I do it well in a new country. So when you have something like regulatory election, instead of doing that, I can say, listen, I'm set up for operations in Canada. I understand in Canada. My lawyers and my regulators and my compliance guys all understand in Canada. I can shift that business model with no friction into Prospera, into Honduras, and access an entirely new geography with no headache, with no, you know, relearning, no uncertainty, those sorts of things. So the cost and the setup, you know, is one thing, but for me, it's the application of a complicated regulated business in multiple jurisdictions. Like, it's going to change the way that people, you know, do business. Imagine that you get banking set up in Prospera, you get your business set up in Prospera. Prospera opens a new hub in El Salvador. You overnight, you just gained access to an entire new country. Prosper opens a new hub in Africa. You overnight gained access to an entire new, you know, continent. Like it's mind blowing when you think about the implications. And I think regulatory election has a lot of, you know, implications beyond just the cost for those things.
Something I've never quite fully understood as well is when you choose a regulatory model, I think it's from OECD.
Yep.
Say I'm use that example again. I'm a cryptocurrency exchange, and I choose the regulations from the UK. I probably wouldn't actually thinking about it, but let's say I did. Who oversees whether or not I'm actually adhering to those? Is it the government of Prospera or is it the UK? I don't understand it.
Yeah, you're getting into some good stuff, and I'm the numbers guy, so I'll give you my my understanding, and I understand it, you know, fairly well. But in that case, any true free market needs to have some level of assurance over the operations that happen within the business, right? So typically, we would expect a government body to be overseeing those operations and be the regulator in that case. In a free market economy, you know, the theory holds, and it's what we apply in Prospera, that function of regulatory oversight can be best and should be best managed by an insurance provider. An insurance provider is the only industry in the world who has the financial alignment and financial incentive to find the most profitable way to regulate business. If they overregulate, they're spending a tremendous amount of money on lawyers, on audits, on all this regulatory, you know, burden that costs a ton of money. It's not efficient. And if they underregulate, well, then they have, you know, so many claims and their business model doesn't make sense. So if you look at it on a curve at the, you know, it starts high and then it goes into a U shape and then it ends high, they have the financial motive to find, you know, the least costly way to regulate a business. So in your example, you know, you choose your OECD country that you want to be regulated by, you're going to go through a process as a regulated industry to be insured. You have to have, you know, regulatory insurance in Prospera. The insurer is going to have a conversation with you on, you know, what am I going to do to make sure that my business is functioning in a way that's ethical, that's not high risk, so that the insurance provider isn't on the hook for some massive payout. So the insurance provider is going to restrict you in ways. You know, maybe you're in a completely unfamiliar territory for the insurance provider. So what they might do is they'll say, okay, we'll underwrite your policy. You can operate in Prospera, but you're going to be required to, you know, have a monthly check-in with this industry-leading, you know, expert that we've identified. And this industry-leading expert is going to give you, you know, a formal attestation. They're going to attest to the fact that we understand, you know, Luke's crypto exchange. He knows what he's doing. We check these things and we're giving our monthly approval, right? And maybe then they say, and we want you to get an audit from, you know, one of these on this list of audit firms. We want you to get an audit, you know, annually from these individuals. So they can, you know, kind of pick and choose how they want to enforce that on you. And it's your choice. It's like, well, do you want to, you know, operate in this regulated industry? Well, you need insurance and the insurance provider is requiring you to do this. You can accept it or not, right? So it's kind of up to you whether or not you accept it. And that creates a market now for insurance providers. If I see, you know, you're trying to open, you know, Tim's, you know, crypto exchange and your insurance premium's, you know, $400,000 and you're happily paying it, I'm like, well, I know him. Like, he's not doing anything shitty. Like, I'll do it for $200K. You know what I mean? So it starts to create a market for that insurance product. And that's what I think is next for Prospera. Once we start to see more and more, you know, these regulated industries come online, we're going to see, you know, new innovative ways for insurance companies to start to understand risk and underwrite risk. And there's an interesting connection with, you know, what we're seeing now in Bitcoin Prague with all this stuff with Nostr and Bitcoin. I think it allows an insurance provider to really potentially leverage those technologies and underwrite risk on a case-by-case basis with this publicly verifiable social identity. Hmm. It's like this social network is basically telling the insurance provider, listen, I know this guy. And it's giving you a little bit more comfort on the activities that you're doing. So it's kind of all interconnected in this kind of cool way. But yeah,
is that really the way that it's going? So let me just say it back to you so I understand it. So Nostr is now getting into the realm of identities. So I have a Nostr account and it belongs to me and it's mine, but I can use it to access a social media network if I want, but like one of the, you know, whatever it is, Primal that I use. But also you're saying now that I can use that as a kind of rating to get myself say, preferential insurance, or in the future? Is that kind of what you're saying?
In the future, that's how I see it. That's how I see it going. You know, that's the way I see it building towards. The conversations I'm having with guys who are heavily involved in Nostr more than myself, they see that as a use case. It's just this, you know, this social proof of identity that I think can lend very well into the insurance space. So, I mean, are we in Prospera doing this now? Definitely not. You know, we're underwriting, you know, insurance policies for regulated industries the old fashioned way. It's like, well, let's understand your business. Let's define the risk and let's underwrite the policy. But when you see this web of decentralized entities kind of converging together, it's this interesting sort of dynamic that you're starting to see. And that's, you know, the future that I think, you know, could be.
The bit before, when we were talking about insurance companies underwriting regulations from other countries, basically, you know, making sure you adhere to them. What happens in the case of companies creating their own regulations, which can also happen? Is it the same process? They just have to be a little bit more risk averse because it's a new arena, basically.
Yeah, great question. Companies have done it. There's a couple of banking charters that have been passed. You know, banks want to set up in Prospera. It's like, well, maybe we're not rehypothecating funds, so we have one-to-one treasury reserves. So we don't need all the restrictions on, you know, what kind of instruments are we investing in? How are we earning yield? How are we using customer funds? None of that makes sense. So they've been able to sort of define, you know, that within the regulatory mechanism that they create. And it's similar. So you create the regulatory mechanism, and then you'd have restrictions applied to that. So Prospera, you know, the insurance provider would say, okay, you know, we approve it, but, you know, we're underwriting the risk and, you know, X, Y, and Z need to be true. So you would still have the same stipulations.
Mm. It's just a longer process to discover what the premium might be or something.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. But it's honestly not, you know, you hear about this idea and if you're rooted in this, you know, fiat system, this bureaucracy, me in Canada, like if I heard about this and I didn't know anything about Prospera, I'd say, well, that's going to take forever, right? Like I'm used to dealing with bureaucrats. I'm used to dealing with a slow moving system, the system that is not innovative, that doesn't want disruption. And that's not the case in Prospera. You're not, you know, making, you know, an intellectual argument to a bureaucrat. You're making a business case argument to a businessman. You're talking to a private, you know, insurance company and saying, listen, here's me, here's you, here's what I'm doing. You know, you understand it. Here's the risk. Here's the value at risk. You know, underwrite the policy. So it's a fairly quick process to get that in place.
Going back to what you said about the pioneers currently living there, let's say, the first wave of people that are actually living in Prospera, yourself being one of them. Can you talk a little bit about who those people are or what businesses they are? What's currently going on the ground now in Prospera?
Yeah, right now, you know, it's a number of, I'd say the initial community, like I said earlier, is Prospera pioneers. It's people involved in the project. Me on the finance side, you know, another individual and his family on the hotel operations side. You know, a couple families there. You know, another family is involved on the real estate development side. So they're all under the Prospera umbrella in different ways, and that's the initial community that's forming. You know, the dive shop guy and you know the golf course manager. This is the initial community that's starting to form, and these are the guys that, you know, like if I'm having, you know, I ship down a smoker. I ship down like a pellet smoker to do briskets and stuff like that. Like if I'm doing a nice barbecue on Saturday night, like this is the community of people that I'm inviting over. And a lot of it is, you know, core to the initial Prospera build out. There are a couple of businesses and entrepreneurs that are also within that community. But we haven't seen any like, you know, headliner shifts in that. There's still, you know, the guys at Circular Factory, they're still doing their thing. You know, there's the guys at, you know, Nicholas and his fund, he's still doing his thing. So like there are people who aren't involved directly with the project who are part of that core community as well. But I'd say like, you know, at least for myself, my initial core community is those individuals involved in the project directly.
What about, I thought Duna residence was completed. Are there people living in it already or moving in? I think it was the other day, wasn't it? It was very recently.
Yeah, this week.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, this week they're handing over keys and I'm not even there for it. I'm pretty bummed about that. But yeah, so, and that's sort of, I guess you could call that phase two of community building is those are Prosperians. Those are people who understand the mission. They bought a unit in this free private zone. They knew what they were getting into. They have, you know, their Prospera residency. They're in it. So that's the community that's starting to form, you know, around Duna. And I just haven't, I haven't experienced that on the ground yet, because I'm, you know, here in Prague right now while they're handing over keys. But yeah, that'll be another, you know, 82 units, probably over 100 people within that.
Really? Can you, do you know much about the demographic or how many units are? I've got a feeling we talked about this the other day and you said they sold half and they kept half back to be rental units. Was that right?
Yeah, it was about that split. So we did pre-sales. And then during the pre-sale stage, we had this event early this year called Vitalia. Vitalia was this pop-up city. It was this online community of, you know, biohackers, people who want to live forever, that whole thing. This online community, you know, decided to come together and do this pop-up city and be, you know, in community together. And we saw three, I think almost 400 people converge on Prosper for that. And obviously like a tremendous, you know, success in terms of the economic benefit to our zone, to the restaurants, to the dive shop, to the golf course, to all these amenities. You know, we saw that as a huge value add. So we saw this first sort of app being developed on Prospera, right? If Prospera is Bitcoin, it's, you know, layer one. We saw the first Lightning Network take off, like the first layer two within that community. So we saw success early this year with that. And, you know, we had pre-sold what we did, and we had, you know, legal contracts to deliver those units and sell those units, and that's fine. But we said, well, you know, rather than having this building completed, and then obviously the rest of the units are going to sell very quickly because people are living there and it's no longer, you know, a risky initiative, you know, why not hold back some of that? And the next time Vitalia, or the next time, you know, Bitcoin, whatever, Caribbean or whatever conference is held in Prospera, the next time we have this event bringing together people who understand Prospera, we can do it so much better. We have, you know, more capacity, more amenities, more resources, and then we can start, you know, maybe we start pre-sales on, you know, Tower 2, Tower 3. So it was a business decision to sort of strategically pivot and hold back those units, and then now we're going to leverage those as part of this sort of community building aspect.
It would also be very beneficial if you're renting to people that want to live forever as well.
Yeah, it's a long lease.
So tell me a little bit about what's literally about to happen in this handing over of the keys. Are you talking about literally just people turning up and going, great, I'm moving into my apartment?
Literally,
man. Is there furniture and stuff in there?
It's furnished, baby. They're ready to go. And it's so exciting being a part of the project and seeing this, because it's all theoretical until it happens. Like building property in Prospera is theoretical until we said, you know, let's do the thing. Let's build beta building. We built beta building. It's like, all right, like, that worked. All right, let's do it again. Let's do, you know, Duna Tower. And it's theoretical until you stand in front of this massive 14-story condo building in a free private city in a special economic zone in Honduras. And it's like, you know, holy cow, like this is happening. This is real. Like this is going on. And then again, with the turnover of keys, it's like property ownership. Property ownership is different in Prospera than it is in Roatan. In Roatan, you need to have residents. You need to have, you know, this and that and the other thing. Prospera, you just have, you know, Prospera residents. So let's do this. Let's test this thing. And now we literally have people who own property, own, you know, a fee simple title, full ownership of property in Roatan because of Prospera, only because of Prospera. So we're seeing these keys being handed over, and these people are excited because, you know, they get a living community with their friends. They understand Prospera and the mission, and they're like, you know, I keep using this word, but they're like, you know, these sort of first pioneers into this project. So yeah, it's happening. These guys are there. They're excited. If you look online, you know, there's videos of people, you know, taking keys and doing, you know, promo stuff. Like,
are there?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I should have looked at those.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I went there, oh, it was a number of months. In fact, I think when you were at BTC, adopting BTC, I think I was at that talk as well. It was down in a kind of basement-y type place, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
In Prospera. Yeah. That was the last time I went to Prospera. So the Duna building was somewhat of a shell, but I've seen videos of it since. And what's happened to the, did it turn out that you had a load of work units in there as well? Was it a mixed-use tower? Like at the time they were talking about that.
Yeah, at the time they were talking about, you know, what's going to make the most sense, sort of put it out to the community and built on that. So there's four stories. The first four floors are mixed use, so retail and commercial, so things like restaurants, cafe, as well as, you know, maybe an office space, a co-working space, things like that. So those floors are dedicated to that. And with the community moving in now, you know, we'll start to see who takes what, who does what, who builds what. But it's kind of, it's chicken and the egg, right? Like, you can't go to a bunch of businesses and say, hey, like, you know, set up your restaurant here. I promise this building will be full next month. You can't really do that. So I think you need sort of the critical mass and a bit, and an entrepreneur, you know, responsibly needs to see the population there. And then they're like, okay, well, now I see the opportunity. So we haven't seen those spaces, you know, activated just yet. But I think that'll be next with the residential stuff coming online.
So if you are a resident now, do you have to pop into the nearby town to buy food or whatever? And that, you know, how would you be a resident there?
Yeah, so there's a number of amenities inside Duna, but I think if you wanted to really activate within the zone, you're gonna require to, we have a water taxi to sort of the Pristine Bay Resort. So there's a number of restaurants and bars, and that's where the golf club and stuff like that is. So that would, you'd have access to that, obviously. But yeah, you're right. If you wanted to do, you know, your grocery shopping, things like that, you're taking the 10-minute hike in, and you're doing that sort of in Greater Roatan. There isn't grocery stores, there isn't convenience stores set up just yet.
And how are you going to let that unfold? Are you waiting for the free market to build a, for example, a supermarket, say, or something? Or are you going to take the initiative as Prospera and do something like that?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think supermarkets days are dated, right? Like,
Talking about flying stuff in drones?
Not necessarily that, because that sounds wacky. But like, me and my family, right? Don't judge me. But we'll order groceries and it'll just be delivered to our house. So we don't leave the zone. It just, a little guy on a motorcycle comes with a bag of groceries. He just delivers it to us every week. And I think that's the kind of the way that things are going. People are getting used to this delivery economy. People are getting used to that and they're familiar with that. And guys moving into Prospera are probably familiar with that. So they're probably going to be doing a lot of the same. And I think these delivery companies are going to sort of, you know, get wise to that and maybe have it a faster service, or maybe like a regular service, or just, you know, whatever they do to innovate, I think they'll leverage that. And that's a form of the free market sort of, you know, filling this need. But I mean, who knows? Maybe somebody spins up a supermarket and it's a hit. But I think it feels pretty, you know, old fashioned to me, being someone who regularly just, you know, I pull up my phone, I select what I want, and it's here in 10 minutes. Like, that's kind of what I'm used to now. So, and then the drone stuff on top of that, it's like, well, that'll be.
It's quite a Central American thing, in my experience, that delivery thing as well. We lived in El Salvador for a while, and every morning a truck appeared with fruit and veg on the back of the truck playing a tune, and everyone just popped out of their shop, out of their house, and bought. And it was good value. You know, the market was strong. You know, everyone bought from this thing, because it literally meant you didn't have to go anywhere, which in a lot of places in Central America, that's a bit of a pain in the ass, actually leaving. You might not even have a vehicle. You might, you know, it's not possible to do those kind of things.
You see that in Roatan as well, right? You see the fruit truck guys driving around. You see the, you know, the fruit stands and stuff. And I think people are, generally speaking, entrepreneurial. And they'll fill that need, you know, the fruit trucks and the grocery trucks and whatever else, you know, they'll discover Duna. They'll discover these, you know, 100 people living out in Duna, and they'll fix
that. How would that work, out of interest? Say I'm a Roatanese. Is that how you say it? I don't know. No.
I don't know.
Say I'm a Roatanese entrepreneur living outside of Prospera, yeah, and I've got a food truck. Can I just drive in and sell stuff, or do I need to get some kind of permission or what?
Yeah, so right now, if you're doing business in Prospera, you need to have a form of residency. You know, we're workshopping what makes the most sense to answer this exact question. You know, do we sell temporary passes? Do we allow, you know, certain businesses? But I think there has to be a strong element of access control, for obvious reasons, you know, within the jurisdiction. So speaking right now, you would have, if you're inside the zone conducting business, you would have to be a resident and you'd have access control, and they would check your residency on the way in. It would be kind of, you know, a bit of friction. Realistically, I think what happens is either we come up with a better product on the Prospera side to, you know, allow these entrepreneurs and these, you know, delivery trucks to come in and service, you know, Prosperians, or it's simply, you know, drop it off at the security gate and then we'll have somebody, you know, bring it up to your room, kind of thing, just to keep the separation there. But yeah, there's certainly an element of access control that needs to be and is maintained.
I wonder how that would work with drones as well. That's a very interesting prospect, because you've got the ability for drones to land on the top of the tower, haven't you? That wasn't that a part of the design of it?
Yeah, there's a drone pad up there. Yeah.
Yeah. I know it's quite it's bizarre, really. So, when do you think that might happen? Then has anyone been hinting at anything like that, drone deliveries? And
yeah, there's a company that started up in Prosper called Aerial Loop, and they're solving this exact need. Timeline is unknown. I wouldn't give a timeline even if I heard one, because you know who knows what that actually looks like. But with the drone pad, you know, upstairs, theoretically, I order you know whatever from mainland Honduras, and it's a 30-minute delivery
really?
Time.
They're talking about coming. What? Well, that's a long way, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not that long. It's about
over the sea, from the mainland.
Yeah, yeah.
How far is it?
Not long. Like it would be on the ferry. It would take you an hour and a half to get there. So think, and that's a slow ferry. Think a drone is just ripping, right? So
that drone technology must have moved on a lot since the last time I flew one.
I mean, I'm not a drone guy either, so I'm.
But you used to get 15 minutes max in the sky. You know, that's
well, they're piloting it elsewhere in the world, right? They're piloting Amazon's piloting drone delivery and stuff like that. So like, I saw think a the
video
tech is there.
I saw a video online yesterday from China of. I think something was happening on a road somewhere, and drones were just ferrying building materials backwards and forwards across this valley. I mean, big, heavy things, not like little drones. These were like, I mean, yeah, gosh.
That's bananas.
It is. It's already moving a little bit too fast for me. I think I'm getting too old for this. You look like you're absolutely pumped by it all.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
are, right?
Oh, absolutely, man. I'm excited to see what comes out of it. And it's like I said, you know, guys are going to have ideas that nowhere else in the world they can activate. And it's so incredible to be a part of that and to understand that and to see and understand, you know, what that could look like. If it's drone delivery, I think that's, you know, that could be game changing. To me, it sounds, you know, a little bit trivial. It's like, I don't mind, you know, waiting for delivery of something, drone delivery. I don't know what that changes, but you know, I'm not thinking like some of these entrepreneurs are thinking, but we're already seeing it take place. There's another company that started in Prosper that does, they're called Mini Circle. They do like gene therapy stuff. It's something you cannot do in the United States. And people are coming, you know, from around the world, you know, these people are coming into the Prosper jurisdiction to receive these therapies that can't be done anywhere else. So you're going to see stuff like that. And the drone is one example, and the gene therapy is the other. You're going to start to see stuff like that. And I'm pumped by it.
That when I hear things like that, I know that there's going to be a percentage of the population that go, wait a minute, you can't do that. You can't just experiment with gene therapy in a place with no rules and blah, blah. I take it that's a common retort to that kind of stuff, is it?
It's controversial. Yeah, it's controversial for sure. And at the end of the day, you know, we have a regulatory system that we feel is built in a way that has the safeguards in place. It's not the Wild West. It's not anything goes. It's not lawless. There's not, you know, people running around doing whatever they want. You know, we have restrictions. For example, you can't just, we're restricting, for example, vice industries. You can't come and set up a strip club or a casino or things like that, because we don't want to be associated as a jurisdiction that just, it was created for this stuff, for avoiding and sidestepping laws and avoiding and sidestepping, you know, things that are in place and rules that are in place for a reason. So there's certainly freedom and flexibility, but there's also, you know, safeguards in place to make sure that, you know, things are being done responsibly and experts are involved where they need to be and things like that. But there's always going to be stuff that's controversial, definitely.
Do you imagine, I know one of Prosper's ideas is to, and this is probably the wrong word, but franchise, if you know what I mean. It's kind of, I don't know how you describe it, but create more Prosperous, right? Do you anticipate that they'll all have different personalities? Is that the idea of that kind of thing?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
You can't take a one size fits all approach. We've seen that around the world, you know, trying to import, you know, America's version of democracy somewhere else. Like it sounds good, but it oftentimes fails. It doesn't work. So I think these, you know, I call them nodes, you call them franchises.
It's a, whatever. No, it's, you know, a bad word.
They're connected, and they're all sort of a part of the Prosper governance framework. They definitely will have identities, and they're going to have problems that they solve that are unique to that zone. We're working closely with Megat Wade now, who's doing work in Africa. So, you know, Prospera, when it sets up its node in Africa, it's going to be a completely different dynamic, a completely different set of problems that it's solving for in Africa. But it's using the same, you know, mechanisms of we believe that the root problem of a lot of these issues that are stunting economic growth, that are keeping people, you know, in poverty, is bad governance. And it's still solving for that common thread of bad governance. So it's solving it. I think it's going to be solving it in unique and different ways, you know, leveraging different things from different geographical regions. Prospera in Africa is going to look wildly different than Prospera in Roatan, which is going to look wildly different than Prospera in El Salvador. But there's going to be this sort of common thread of the governance system should, in my mind's eye at least, you know, look very similar across the board.
Can you talk about specifics on the Africa thing? Like where, who, what?
Yeah, it's early. It's super early stages. So there aren't many specifics to discuss. It's something that's being explored now. And, you know, we're working again with you know, this freedom-minded advocate who sees what Prosper is doing, is a huge supporter of what we're doing, and thinks that this could be a great solution to a lot of areas in Africa. But there's nothing, you know, there's no shovels in the ground yet.
Or countries, just out of interest.
Nothing, like there's no agreements in place with any specific countries that I know of.
Say it appears in a country, how would it work? I'm presuming that if you have a Prospera residency, that would include all Prosperas. Is that the way it would work in a network like that?
Yeah, that would be the idea.
So what do you do about the nation at that point? You still have to kind of get visas between nations, et cetera, or whatever. You know?
Yeah. People often, you know, misinterpret what Prospera is in that exact way, right? Prospera is not a city state. Prospera is not a country. You know, it's not a Vatican City. Prospera is it's a charter city. It's driven by a charter that was created in a special economic zone, but it's still in Honduras, right? This is it's a municipality in Honduras. To be in Prospera is to be in Honduras. I, as a Canadian, need to have the ability to be in Honduras to travel to and live within Prospera, right? For me, that means I can stay there for 3 months at a time. And it's you know, a rolling 3 months. So I can stay for 3 months, leave for 2 days, stay for 3 months, leave for 2 days. So I could be there, you know, 360 days in a year, right? And it would be the same likely in other countries. If we had that extra level of sovereignty, maybe it's not. Maybe we have an airstrip into Prospera and you don't even have, you know, immigration issues with the host country. That could be the case. I think it's highly unlikely, though. I think, you know, from my opinion, and again, I'm the numbers guy, you know, these host nations want this degree of autonomy, this degree of sovereignty that they're not going to give up, you know, for the special economic zone. They want to be bystanders, and they want to, you know, see what happens sort of in the sandbox, but they still want to control that sandbox. They still want that sandbox in their yard, so to speak.
When I think about the future, though, I do think that one day, and actually Prospera in Roatan is a good example because you're on the sea. I've always thought that a network of cities like Prospera would be good to link up with, like, boats, livable boats, because you could then just, but have, but not be self, completely self-sovereign, so that you could just get off Prospera and then go to bed in a cabin and wake up in a new Prospera, which is somewhere else, like El Salvador in that case. But that would be a lovely future. I think a lot of people would very much appreciate that.
I disagree. Really? I disagree. I think, you know, for an economy to grow, you need to have citizens. You need to have people that are there contributing and building and integrated in and proud of their community. You need to have I think there's this lost sense of community in Canada, certainly. I don't know if it was ever there. In Latin America, you see it where, you know, people are out in the street. They know each other. They're communicating with each other. They're friends. Like, everybody knows everybody. In Europe, a lot of the places that I've been, I see a similar dynamic. You know, you have the old town square. Every you know, country or city, big city you visit has an old town square, and people congregate and gather around it, and they're familiar with each other, and there's businesses who have been there for, you know, however many generations. And I think that's so important to the fabric of a lot of societies. And I think if you're transient like that, you're not going to be able to build that, and you're not going to be able to truly build, you know, a robust economy if every 3 or 4 years there's this changeover, because it's this time preference, right? Like, if you have high time preference and it's like, well, I'm not going to invest, I'm not going to build because, well, I can, you know, go off to wherever on a boat next month. It's like, well, you're not going to make the effort to build community. Community building takes effort. I know that personally, right? My wife and I, when we moved down to Roatan, we didn't know anybody. And we said from day one, we need to integrate with this community. You know, we're moving there. We're meeting people. We found a church within the first week, and we're like, we just need to plug in somewhere. Like somebody, we need this community around us, because it can get so lonely. And I think if you're transient like that, and you're temporal and you're thinking like that, I think you lose a lot of that community building.
Do you think that the 21st century is an era of travel? And it's almost like once you've done it and once you've seen a bit of the world, it's very hard to sort of go back to living that life where you stay in the same place for a long time, which is kind of what you're talking about there. You know, you're hoping that Prospera will be a place where people stay and even don't necessarily need to go and shopping or whatever, but it all happens there. Do you think that will work? Do you think that we've seen too much of the world I mean, this is my own experience. I've traveled loads, and where I live now, it would be very difficult to just spend all my time there. You know, like I have a sigh of relief to be in Prague for a week. It's totally different. It's totally new. There's people everywhere because I live out in the countryside, you know, back home. So do you think that model is going to work? Or is that, I mean, that might not even be the model. That just may be your own preference. But that model of trying to keep people in or just hoping that people will stay in a relatively small jurisdiction, you know?
Yeah, like I don't see those ideas as mutually exclusive. Where I'm describing that I see community here, for example, people still travel, right? I still travel. I'm here right now, so I still travel. But I have a home base, right? When I say to my wife, oh, I'm excited to go home, like that means something. I have a home base, and you have a home base too. And I think that's important. Having a home base, having somewhere that you can, you know, set your roots. I think that's important. I don't think that means you're not traveling. That would be ridiculous. I think what's more important, maybe where I'll reframe, you know, the conversation is, in my opinion, Prospera is so powerful, and what you're describing is so powerful because you can shift, you can change, you're able to, you know, opt out of the current system and opt into a new system. So if Prospera and Roatan is maybe the charter changed, you know, maybe they passed some sort of wacky thing, maybe COVID came back and for whatever reason, you know, the majority of people in Prospera said, yeah, max and vax, like that's what we want to do everywhere you go. It's like, okay, well, I have the option to now opt out into a new zone. That's important. Having the freedom to do that is important. And it forces Prospera to not treat you as a citizen like a country does, but really treat you as a customer. It's like, how do we maintain that this governance system in a way that's profitable for our investors? And that's only done if we're, you know, really thinking about the individual as a customer. And hopefully that results in you not wanting to leave. But I think if you are able to leave, that's the important part, the optability. Hmm.
What can you talk a little bit about what's coming soon in Prospera? What, like, Duna was a project that was kind of at the forefront and now is complete, right? Pretty much, apart from,
yeah. You know,
what are the next big plans? Or once again, are you letting the market decide?
We're strategic where we're investing our capital. We're investing our capital in initiatives that we think will catalyze new industry verticals. So things that will to lend to build the framework and the groundwork for new businesses and for the free market to build new on new industries. For example, an industry hub on mainland Setouye. You know, what does that look like? Is that where we're going to invest our capital so that people who aren't interested maybe in community building and living in this, you know, Prospera community, but maybe they can leverage that and build some sort of nearshoring port. Or maybe it's, you know, building out for a clinic in one of our spaces, you know, inside of Prospera. You know, can we invest capital and build the foundation for that new industry vertical, you know, a medical center, things like that. Maybe it's acquiring, you know, land to catalyze a brand new, you know, type of factory. So there's lots of things that are on the radar, and all of those things, they're not simply, you know, let's build five more homes, let's build another pool, let's keep doing what we're doing. Our investment now is laser focused on how do we, again, catalyze these new industry verticals? How do we get the next generation of entrepreneurs who are coming to Prospera excited and making it as diverse an investment base as possible? So that's the big thing, you know, the big picture. Smaller picture, you know, we have, you know, different entities coming online. One called Nomad Village, they do like these little cluster villages around the world. They chose Prospera as one of their next sites. So they're going to be hopefully very soon activating, you know, one of their villages next to Duna Tower.
What does that mean?
Super
activating
exciting.
Activating a village. What?
Shovels in the ground. Yeah, building the like a cluster of houses, basically, like a little village.
They call Are they it. Like a kind of WeWork for digital nomads type of thing?
I think so.
Right. I'm guessing just by the sound of it.
Yeah.
Right. So new buildings then.
Some new buildings, you know, we're within Prosper, we're doubling capacity at our hotel. We finished Duna now. It's still a construction zone. There's still dirt. We still have to landscape. There's still work to be done. But, you know, Duna, I'd say, is 99% done. Within the hotel, we're doubling capacity to, again, support these events. And we're investing into the infrastructure for supporting events. So we're doing things like that just to, you know, enhance what we have. And that will allow us to really, you know, fully take advantage of the asset base we have today, which is very important, right? We have these cash flowing assets. We want to make sure we're making good fiduciary duties to extract as much value out of that as possible. But we're also, you know, reinvesting those funds into new projects that on a bigger scale can activate some pretty cool projects.
Do you get a sense of the direction it's all going in? You mentioned like events. Do you get a sense being there all the time that, oh yeah, this is going to be big here, or, you know, like events, it might easily become a place where people say, hey, yeah, we can put our event on here really easily and with very minimum trouble and XYZ or whatever, or is that just going to be one aspect of it? You know, as someone who's living there and working there, you must be getting a sense of the general direction it's going in.
Yeah, I think it's in the phase right now where events will be the catalyst to community building. Events, you know, we're at Bitcoin Prague right now, right? Like, this is a community that's gathered around Bitcoin as a sound money, freedom principles, you know, decentralized. All these different things lend to this gathering of individuals around this, you know, community. And I think those communities are going to start to find Prospera and realize that they can sort of, you know, congregate and be together and really, you know, flesh out their ideas in community together. So I think in the near term, that's where I see Prospera going. It's going to be heavy in events, you know, Bitcoin events. We're going to be hosting some Bitcoin events, doing Bitcoin stuff. I think that's where in the near to medium term, that's where a lot of our effort will be focused, is just getting people to come down and see the place, understand what it is, you know, have an event there and start to, you know, look around and think about what they could be doing within Prospera. Ultimately, you know, we exist to sort of, you know, build a community of entrepreneurs, right? So what we need to do, our job is to get the entrepreneurs to come and see us, to come and understand what Prospera is. And we'll have done our job right if those entrepreneurs are there and excited and have the tools to do, you know, the building, have the tools to be entrepreneurs. So in the short term, I think that's the direction I see it going, is a heavy emphasis on events, a heavy emphasis on getting people to come and visit and stay, you know, temporarily. And I think out of that, we'll start to see the longer term community builds. But man, you're not going to set up a stall somewhere and be like, hey, come move to Prospera, you know, like just buy a place, you know, sight unseen. So I think it's sort of the natural evolution. And yeah, seeing the events take place to date on the ground has been pretty cool to see, for sure.
Is it still possible to buy somewhere in Prospera now?
Yeah, there's lots of private property for sale.
What about in Duna's? Not possible in Duna now, is
it? I think potentially if somebody had a unit that they wanted to sell. But yeah, again, the remaining units that were unsold, we made the decision, you know, earlier this year to put those into a rental pool. So I believe most of those are offline. But if, you know, there was one or two sales that were, you know, sort of in limbo, then potentially, but I think it's sort of few and far between. But within Pristine Bay, you know, there's lots of lots, there's lots of villas, there's lots of, you know, investment opportunities that way. That wouldn't be a Prospera sale. That would be, you know, Luke owns a villa and he's selling it to you privately and it just happens to be in Prospera. Then you incorporate the land and then now you're a part of Prospera. But there's a number of those for sale within Pristine Bay.
Wait a minute, I didn't quite understand that. When you say incorporate the land, what's the connection between Prospera and the physical boundary of Prospera in a way? Like
it's not super easy to understand if you haven't, you know, been involved in the project like I have. So I kind of, you know, gloss over these things. So to try and describe it, Prospera ZA is a zone which includes land that has been incorporated into the ZA. Okay. Prospera, the company that I'm the CFO for, we we're the organizer and promoter. We basically provide the governance services to the land that's incorporated in the ZA. Prospera also owns some of the land, most of the land, I'd say like 99.9% of the land within the ZA. But because some of the land that we incorporated sort of was, you know, a larger geographical area that had those private villa owners inside of it, those specific houses, if I own that house, I would need to opt in and I would need to register my land into the ZA.
Right.
Right. And it's an optional model. You can opt in, you can opt out at any point.
And can you opt, can you incorporate into the ZA if you're further out a little bit? Is that possible under the law?
Or? Yeah, you can. And we've had that, right? So it can be sort of an archipelago of Prospera ZA incorporated land. And we have some zones that aren't attached to the main, you know, Prospera city, you can call it, that have been incorporated. So another area where we were doing employee outsourcing, it's about 15 minutes from the main city. That's Prospera incorporated land. Again, mainland, Setu, Yate, that's Prospera incorporated land, but it's not all connected. So yeah, you can opt to, you know, acquire land and then enroll it into the land bank and be a part of the Prospera ZA. It would need to go through the approval of, you know, the council, which if you just, you know, bought a house in the middle of nowhere, you're like, yeah, I want to be a part of Prospera. It's like, well, you know, it's not worth it for us to provide the, you know, the infrastructure, the tools and the governance services for your single house, you know, way out in the middle of Honduras, for example, potentially, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, generally speaking, you could.
That's interesting. Okay. Last question. The legal situation with the government, and all those, the law was, the ZA law was repealed, right? As far as I understand it, that means you can't make a new ZA, but all the current ZAs, you know, Morazan, Prospera, whatever, are still fine, obviously, under the law. What's the latest in that situation that you know about?
Yeah, so they voted to repeal the constitutional provisions that allow for a ZA to exist. They would have had to ratify or reaffirm that appeal within the same, I guess, year, you could call it, within the same, you know, I don't want to use the wrong words, but within the same, you know, legal period, congressional period, maybe is what they call it. And they didn't do that. So 2023, you know, started with the repeal efforts. Obviously, there was a lawsuit launched by Prospera against the government saying, you know, you're infringing in a material way against our ability to operate. And then they didn't ratify the repeal. Why they didn't ratify, I don't know. Maybe it was the lawsuit. Maybe they realized that, you know, they shouldn't be repealing this thing that's beneficial to them. I don't really know. So there hasn't been any headline news from the government since that whole saga. They haven't, again, voted, to my knowledge, voted to repeal again this year in this congressional, you know, period. But, you know, we're still, because there's no headlines, you know, that doesn't mean we're not dealing with the challenges from the initial attacks, right? We're still dealing with the lingering, you know, second and third order effects of them making these claims, you know, having the society rally against us, you know, inhibiting our ability to, for example, import materials without the extra tariff. And then the general negative, you know, buzz around Prospera. It's like, that's when I'm talking to an investor, that's the first thing they ask about is like, oh, I just read about Prospera. Like, I thought it got canceled. It's like, you know, then you got to go through this whole thing. And it's just plants this seed of doubt in people when they don't really understand it. And that's the negative effect that we're dealing with. And that's a serious, you know, material, significant negative effect as a result of those early actions that they took. But to my knowledge, there hasn't been any sort of like, you know, banner headline, you know, government of Honduras is doing X, Y, and Z since that.
But the was the law repealed then? I didn't quite understand. It didn't actually. So they started the motion, but then never. So it wasn't. Oh God, there we go. I'm in this world, and I thought it was repealed.
No. So yeah, they would have had to ratify it.
So officially now, a new ZA could form if it wanted to.
I don't know if there's still. I believe maybe tech. And again, I don't want to, you know, misspeak, but I think potentially maybe technically the law would allow that to happen, but it would need to go through the approval of the government, and I'm sure they wouldn't, you know, do that. So I don't know for sure if it could or couldn't happen legally, but I think, you know, mechanically, I couldn't see that happening.
I need to speak to one of the lawyers about that. Let's not speculate.
Yeah, let's not speculate. Yeah.
But as far as Prospera goes, no, you don't seem to be holding back. I take it people are relatively confident that it's still going in a good direction.
Yeah, we're still building. We're still, you know, improving. We're still welcoming people, welcoming businesses. You know, we're going full steam ahead. It's challenging with the friction that the government's put in place. There's more challenges, certainly, but, you know, we're not sort of backing off right now, for sure. That's my perspective, at least.
When's the election?
Out of interest? Oh, geez. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know exactly.
I mean, that's obviously could be a turning point as well. Yeah. I mean, it's a function of the political system, what's happening.
Really, yeah, it's something our lawyers are working closely, you know, with external counsel on, and they're monitoring very, very closely. But something, thankfully, that I don't have to, you know, keep a direct line of sight on.
Cool. Well, anyway, Luke, thanks very much for coming in. That was very informative. And good luck with your family and your community. It sounds like I can tell you're totally into this thing.
I'm glad.
No, but it is true. You know, I mean, I think pioneer places need people like yourself to really just be super positive and point out all the good things and make things happen, you know?
Like, yeah, man. I mean, you know, for me, there's this clear delta between the world that I'm in and the world that I was in Canada and the world that I want to raise my son in. And I believe that, you know, we have the duty, you know, we have the responsibility as people who see that and understand that, the same way we do with Bitcoin, to educate and to make sure that people understand, here is the reality. Here is how things are working, and there's an alternative, and there's a system that you can opt out of the old way of doing it. And it's so important for people to take advantage of that and build. And I'd encourage, you know, people to listening to this, you know, check us out, come visit, come build, right? If you're an entrepreneur, you know, do the thing, come build, come visit, come check it out, because it will change the way that you see governance. It will change the way that you, you know, function within governance, for sure.
Well, you're certainly a great advert for the project. And thanks for coming in, Luke. And hopefully I'll see you over there next time.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.